Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson. Part 6, Captain Silver. The Treasure Hunt. The Voice Among the Trees. Partly from the damping influence of this alarm, partly to the rest, Silver and the sick folk, the whole party sat down as soon as they gained the brow of the ascent. Plateau being somewhat tilted towards the west, this part on which we paused. Commanded a wide prospect on either hand. Before us, over the treetops, we beheld a cape of woods fringed with surf. Behind, we not only looked down upon the anchorage instead of an island, the soul, clear across the split in the eastern lowlands, great field of open sea upon the east, sheer above us rose the spyglass, here dotted with single pines, there black with Pisipetes, no sound but that of the distant breakers mounting from all around and chirp of countless insects in the brush. Not a man, not a sail. Upon the sea, the very largeness, the view increased the sense of solitude. Silver, as he sat, took certain bearings, his compass. There are three tall trees, said he, about the right time, lying from Nanskin Island. By God's shoulder, I take it means a steer part here and there. You're terribly to find the stuff now. I'm half a mind to dine first. I don't feel sharp, growled Morgan. Thinking of Flint, I think it would have done me. Oh, well, my son, you praise your stars, he's dead, said Silver. He were an ugly devil, cried the third pirate with a shudder. A blue in the face, too. That's was how the rum took him, added Mary. Blue, well, I reckon he was blue. That was a true word. Ever since they had found the skeleton and got upon this train of thought, they spoke on lower and lower. He almost got to the whispering one now, so the sound of their talk hardly interrupted the silence of the wood. All of a sudden, in the middle of the trees, in front of us, a thin, high, trembling voice struck up the well-known air and words, 50 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum. Never has seen men more dreadfully affected than the pirates. Colour went from their faces. By enchantment, some leapt to their feet, some caught hold of others. Morgan grovelled to the ground. It's Flint, boy, cried Mary. The song was stopped as suddenly as it began. Broken off, you would have said, in the middle of a note, as though someone laid his hand upon the stringer's mouth. Coming through the clear, sunny atmosphere, among the green treetops, a foot, it sounded airily, sweetly. The effect of my companions was the stranger. Come, said Silver, struggling his ashen lips to get the words out. This won't do, stand boy, to go about. This is a rum story. I can't name the voice, but someone's skylighting, someone that's flesh and blood. You may lay to that. His courage had come back as he spoke, and some of the colour of his face along with it. Already the world others began to lend an ear to his encouragement, were coming a little to themselves. The same voice broke out again, not this time singing, but a faint distant hail. Echo yet fainter among the cliffs of the dark spyglass. Darby McCrall, it wailed, for that is the word best describes the sound. Darby McCrall again and again and again, then rising a little higher with an oath and let her leave out. Fetch off the rum, Darby. Buggers remained rooted to the ground, their eyes starting from their heads. Long after the voice had died away, they still stared in silence, dreadful before them. That fixes it, squirrels. Well, let's go. They were his last words, moaned Morgan. His last words above board. Dick had his Bible out, praying verbally. He had been well brought up, had Dick, before he came to sea. Fell among bad companions. Till Silver was unconquered, I could hear his teeth rattle his head. But he had not yet surrendered. Nobody's here in Ireland ever heard of Derby, he muttered, but no one but us that's here. They're making a great effort. See, mates, shipmates, he cried. I here have to get that stuff. I be not to beat by men or devil. I never has feared Flint in his life. My powers, I face him dead. It's £700,000, not a quarter mile from here. When did you ever, gentleman of fortune, show his turn to that much dollars for a floozy old seaman, a blue mug, and him dead too, and no sign of remaking courage his followers? Love, indeed, of growing terror, of reverence of his words. Belay there, John, said Mary. Don't you cross the spirit. The words were too terrified to fly. They would have run away severely had they dared. But fear kept them together, kept them close by John, as if his daring helped them. He and his partner pretty well fought his weakness down. Bread well, maybe, he said. But there is one thing not clear to me. There was an echo. Now, no man ever been a spirit of a shadow. Well, then, what's he doing with an echo to him? I should like to know. It's a nature all, surely. So I won't seem weak enough to me. But then you can never tell what will affect the superstitious. To my wonder, George Mary was greatly relieved. Well, that's so, he said. You'll have an head upon your shoulders, John. No mistake. About shipmates, this here crew's wrong tack. I don't believe, I'd come to think of it, you'd like Flint's voice, I grant you, but not so clear as why he like it. After all, you'd like her somebody else's voice now. You'd like her by the powers, Ben Gunn, roared Silver. Aye, and so it were, cried Morgan, springing up to his knee. Ben Gunn it were. I don't make much odds to do it now. I'll predict Ben Gunn's not here in body any more than Flint's. The older hands greeted his mark with scorn. Why, nobody minds Ben Grimm. Gun, cried Mary. Dead alive, nobody minds him. Extraordinary how their spirits have returned, how the natural colour revived in their faces. Soon they tried together intervals of listening, and not long after, hearing no further sound, they shouldered at all to set forth again, Mary walking fast with Silver's compass, keep them on the right line with Skeleton Island. He said the truth, dead or alive, nobody minded Ben Gunn. Dick alone still held his Bible and looked around him as he went with fearful glances. But he found no sympathy. Silver even joked on his precautions. I told you, said he. I told him I spoiled your Bible. If it ain't no good to swear by, what do you suppose the spirit would give for it? Now that, he snapped his big fingers, holding the moment on his crutch. But Dick was not to be comforted. Indeed, it was soon plain to me, the lad was falling sick, hastened by heat, exhaustion, a shock of alarm, a fever predicted by Dr. Lindsay, evidently growing swiftly higher. His fine open and walking here, upon the summit, away lay a little downhill, for, as I have said, Padlew tilted towards the west. Pines, great and small, grew wide apart, even between the clumps of nutmeg, elysier, wide upon spaces, baked in hot sunshine. Striking as we did, pretty near northwest across the island, with dew on the one hand, even nearer under the shoulders of spyglass, on the other, looked ever wider over the western bay where I once tossed and trembled in the coracle. First, the tall trees was reached by the bearings proved the wrong one. So with the second, the third rose nearly 200 feet in the air above a clump of underwood, the great of Wedgeville, and with a red column as big as a cottage, a wide shadow around it with a company could have manoeuvred. It was a capricious far to see both on the east and west, and might have been entered as a sailing mark upon the chart. But it's not his size that impressed me, my companions. Notice that £700,000 in gold lay somewhere buried below its spreading shadow. Fallen money, they drew nearer, swallowed up their previous terrors. Their eyes burned in their heads. Their feet grew speedier and lighter. Their whole soul was bound in that fortune, that whole lifetime of exaggerant scavengers, and pleasure that lay waiting here for each one of them. Silver hobbled, grunting. His nostrils stood out and quivered. He cursed like a madman when a fly settled on his hot and shiny countenance. He plucked furiously a line that he held him so to him, and from time to time turned his eyes upon me with a deadly look. Certainly he made no plan to hide his faults. I certainly read them like print. Immediate earnest of the gold, all else had been forgotten. He promised the doctor's warning of both things of the past. I could not doubt he hoped to seize upon the treasure. Fine and bold Hesperia and a covered knight cut every honest throat about the island, and sailed away as he had first intended, laden with crimes and riches. Shaken as I was at his alarms, it was hard for me to keep up the rapid pace of the treasure hunters. Now and again I stumbled. It was then that Silver plucked up so roughly at the rope and launched at me his murderous glances. Dick had dropped behind us, and now brought up the rear, was babbling to himself both prayers and curses. His fever kept rising. His ill sided to my wretchedness, the crown and all. I was haunted by the thought of tragedy once been acted on that plateau, by an ungodly buccaneer with a blue face. He who died at Savannah, seen and shadowed with drink, but there with his own hand cut down his six accomplices. The grove was now so peaceful, must have rung with cries. I thought even with the thought, I could believe I heard it still ringing still. Here we are now on the margin of the thicket. Moser, Rosa, and it meets all together, cried Chen Mary, and the foremost broke into run. Suddenly, not 10 yards further, we beheld him stop. A low cry arose. Silver doubled his pace, digging away with foot with crutch, like one possessed. Next moment, he and I came into dead halt. Also came to dead halt. For us, great excavation, like a very recent, the sides had fallen in and grass had sprouted at bottom. If there was shot a pick broken in two, and the balls of several packing cases strewn together. One of these balls was branded with a hot iron as the name Boris, the name of Flint's ship. All was cleared of preparation. The quiche had been found and rifled. The £700,000 were gone.